I used to tell my Shakespeare students that the man could never resist a pun. It didn't matter how bad it was, he couldn't leave it out. Sometimes he needed an editor. You may decide that I need one in a moment, because I can't resist one either. We often have, very often have, a single crow in our balcony, a beloved and distinguished gentleman. But if I'm right, because I know he was to be here and speak, we have two crows in the balcony, male crows. Ernie Crowe's distinguished brother, whose name I think is Jim. Am I right? I can't see well enough to know whether I'm right or not. Ernie isn't doing anything. I may be wrong about everything. But if he is here, meet him in Fellowship Hall with Mrs. Crowe and Ernie and Bertie. If a man wrote a letter to a little second-rate town in a far corner of the Roman Empire 20 centuries ago, could there be anything in such a letter still relevant for people living now? Or would there be only a stale, musty odor, like the smell of an old trunk in the attic when you were a kid, going through family relics on a long rainy afternoon? Much of the medicine, most of the science of that first century is obsolete. But I've been assuming for several weeks that when the Apostle Paul wrote to a little Christian church in Galatia and listed the 9 personality traits people should develop if they profess the Christian faith, I have assumed that it can still make sense to talk about them. Things like love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, fidelity, friendship, and happiness still depend on such things. So we've been able to hear those words without wincing. But we come this morning to one that is neither popular nor fashionable. The word is humility, a tricky word, hard to define, much misunderstood. If you've read Dickens, you may remember Uriah Heep, that caricature of true humility, who went around rubbing his hands and nodding his head obsequiously while he told you over and over what a humble man he was. Humility is not cringing and timidity and putting yourself down. I refuse to sing the line in a hymn that says, "For such a worm as I," we may be made, as the old psalm puts it, a little lower than the angels. But we are not worms, and it is silly to say so. John Bunyan was equally silly, in my view, to describe himself as a loathsome kind of toad. If that is humility, no wonder we reject it. The English poet William Cowper makes fun of that kind of self-put-down in one of his verses. "Now William was a modest youth. His modesty was such that one must say, to tell the truth, he really had too much." I can't speak for the rest of you, but I'd rather deal with blatant arrogance than with false modesty. What we want is a humility that is not aware of itself. Joshua Liebman, in that fine old book called Peace of Mind, tells of a letter a social worker friend of his got from a prominent lady in New York who wanted to join his crusade to help poor children. She spoke at great length of her imperfections and said that perhaps she might be able to make up for them by helping unfortunate children. Well, the social worker recognized a syndrome and made this response: "Dear madam, your truly magnificent shortcomings at present are too great. Nothing could prevent you from visiting them on the victims of your humility. I advise that you love yourself more before you squander any love on others." He saw that she was so proud of her humility that she would load it onto the children until they were crushed by it. Humility can be conceit, hiding behind a mask. True humility, I think, lies somewhere between arrogance and an inferiority complex, but equally different from both of them. It's being comfortable about yourself so that you don't stick out like a sore thumb. It's putting another person first without being crushed yourself. Humility, a great Baptist preacher once said, is not to pretend you can't do something well, if indeed you can. In other words, humility is not some form of dishonesty. It is to make a right estimate of yourself. After all, when Jesus said, "Love your neighbor as you love yourself," he took it for granted that any healthy person would have a reasonable degree of self-love, a sensible self-confidence, along with an awareness of what our limitations are. Once again, in simple terms, honesty. If you were to ask me, for example, half humorously, I would hope to characterize myself, I might say at some point that I type extremely fast. I speak words in public without undue awkwardness or embarrassment, though I should perhaps have more of the latter. And I like to read, but I would admit just as openly that I am mathematically weak, that I cannot sing well or play an instrument, and that on occasion I am neither as patient nor as tolerant as I should be. I deliberately picked three useful traits and three deficiencies for balance, but I know very well that, like the rest of you, my list of areas of ignorance and incompetence is much longer than the other one. Is that humility? It could be, I suppose, although we may be better off to think about it as simple straightforwardness, simple honesty. I keep coming back in my own efforts to deal with this word to that idea of humility as simply making a right estimate of oneself, not a phony posture used to fool someone and get what you want, not an inferiority complex parading as a virtue when it is actually only a neurosis, but realism, the kind that says, "Yes, I can do these things fairly well. No, I can't do those things well at all." My favorite Catholic pope in recent times was John the 23rd. He opened windows and let in fresh air, and I think he meant it without a hint of posturing or false piety when he said, "Anybody can be pope. The proof of this is that I have become one." Well, he knew himself. He was comfortable with himself. That is humility. There's a lovely story about the great Indian saint Ramakrishna, to whom two rather pompous wise men went one day for a visit. They had heard of his great holiness, and they wanted to examine and analyze what he might say. They were greatly impressed when it was over. So they solemnly said in his presence that he must be an avatar, an incarnation of the divine. Ramakrishna is said to have heard that announcement with indifference and with childlike simplicity. He said, "Just imagine, an avatar. Well, I'm glad it's not a disease, but believe me, I know nothing about it. No one can be humble in Christ's sense who takes himself too seriously. Every truly great scientist is humble, far more than many of us who preach humility in pulpits. No one has ever said it better than Thomas Huxley, the great Victorian scientist, and he said this, by the way, to a preacher, Charles Kingsley, back in the 19th century, a good man, Huxley thought might listen. The issue happened to be the new theory of evolution, but it could have been almost anything. Huxley said, "Sit down before the facts as a little child. Be prepared to give up every preconceived notion. Follow humbly wherever nature leads, or you shall learn nothing." A classic definition of humility. This is probably the right moment to tell you that translators have had a little trouble with the Greek word Paul used. Although most versions give it as humility, there are others that translate gentleness or adaptability or tolerance. And although I was surprised at first, I realized as I kept thinking about it that those traits are all a part of what humility means. Gentleness, for example, a maker of piston rings used to advertise with the slogan, "Tough, but oh so gentle." J.B. Phillips translates the first beatitude not the way many of you learned it, "Blessed are the meek, for they shall inherit the earth," but "Happy are the humble-minded, for the kingdom of heaven is theirs." And he did that because he knew that the Greek word praus, very badly translated nowadays as meek, was actually a word used about horses that had been brought under control, tamed. So a humble person, far from being some limp Casper milquetoast, is one whose strength is under control, tough, but oh so gentle. I have known such people. And adaptability, how does that fit? Listen to Paul in another of his letters. "I have learned to be content, whatever the circumstances may be. I know how to live when things are difficult, and I know how to live when things are prosperous. I am ready for anything through the strength of the one who lives within me." One way humility expresses itself is through adaptability. The woman said to me, "I lost my husband 4 months ago. He died suddenly and without warning and left me utterly alone. But I have learned this. When the day starts, all I have to do is carry on till noon. When noon comes, all I have to do is carry on till evening. When the day is nearly over, I don't have to face another day till another day comes. I'm taking life in little pieces. That's how I make it. She is a woman who faces life with humility, bending as she must to make the best of each moment. One translation of the word Paul used is tolerance. And that's instructive too, because humility requires putting up with those who are very different from ourselves. The author of the first epistle of Peter describes the church once in a graphic image. We are living stones built up into a spiritual house, but stones, not bricks. Bricks tend to be alike, clones of one another, from the same mold. But stones, quarried, take different forms, some round, some oval, some rough, some smooth. Look around this room and think what a diverse lot we are. Without tolerance, we'd fall apart overnight. I once considered a job as chairman of the humanities division in a university at Normal, Illinois. So when I saw a news item the other day from a Normal newspaper, it caught my eye. There is a little town about 80 miles southeast called Oblong, Illinois. And one day the paper read, "Normal boy marries Oblong girl." I hope they lived happily ever after. I know for sure that if we are to live happily in a church, those of you who are normal and those of us who are oblong will have to be tolerant, another facet of humility. But the word I really want you to remember for a while when you leave is the basic one, humility. And since I've tried to define what it is and what people are like who have it, it may be useful for just a moment to define it negatively by showing you people who don't have it. Mike Tyson, the heavyweight champ at one time, made an observation about how people perceive him. "I'm in trouble," he said. We thought we knew why, but he had another reason. "I'm in trouble because I'm normal and slightly arrogant. A lot of people don't like themselves, and I happen to be totally in love with myself." I really think he was, which means that he was in prison before he went to prison. He just didn't know it. We have to be sensibly in love with ourselves, not totally. And we have to realize that we need other people. I was talking one day about the glacier man. You know, that 5,000-year-old guy found frozen in ice at the foot of a glacier a year or so ago. And when a certain woman was asked what she thought about how he died, she said, "Well, he was a man, wasn't he?" And when I asked what that had to do with anything, she said, "Well, since he was a man, he probably just got lost and was too dumb and too stubborn to ask directions." Every wife knows. She said rather than humble himself and admit he made a wrong turn, he preferred to sit down with his pride on that glacier and die. Well, her sexist jab may be the truth, I don't know, but it's wiser to climb risky mountains together, and that knowledge, too, is part of what humility means. One more word. I cannot imagine how one can be humble who does not acknowledge the element of pure good luck in life. We praise self-made men and women, But in the absolute sense, there is no such thing. One of the ironies of life is that if we fail, we blame genetics and environment. But if we succeed, we take all the credit for ourselves. The truth is that for any measure of success, we owe much to many. I have, for example, been energetic and healthy all my life, but the credit goes mostly to my ancestors, to the gene pool in my parents, who owed their makeup in turn to their parents. I did not inherit a major handicap or disease that made life hard for me. I came into the world with reasonably regular features, so that when I walked in to ask for a job, I did not put people off at first sight. But that was genetically determined too. I've worked hard, so it would be easy to say that whatever good has come is my own doing, but that's much too simple. Something, remember this about people, something made me want to work hard, to do well, to be successful in whatever I chose to do. Where did that something come from? I know that a lot of it came from parents who loved me, disciplined me, set good examples, and thereby fashioned me in large part in their own image. If they had been enormously wealthy, I might have had enough sense and ambition to increase that wealth, or at least hang on to it, in which case I would probably accept the judgment of the world that I was a self-made man, but it would not be true. We owe huge debts to a long list of people. Humility arises from simple gratitude. In secret thought or spoken word, it says every single day, thank you for what I have been given.